Welcome to Day Zero Update for September 6th, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Logi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
And yeah, we've got a big week of news as we had a large state of play, or a states of play, I guess I could call it. And back-to-back ones covering some different things, but like you would expect out of like a Japanese showcase, they sit down and talk to devs or voice actors or whoever. I feel like a lot of people did not understand that. Especially with TGS coming up, you're going to see a lot of that kind of stuff going on. But yeah, outside of that, we had a number of other bits of news. Nintendo has a number of things going on, and Double Fine announced some more news, so that's cool to see. As well as some other industry news going on, some bad, some good, which is better than usual, so there you go. But before we get to that stuff, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. As I've been playing some more iRacing Arcade, I just finished the second year, and I'm kind of getting into a bit of a groove here, but also trying to deal with the way that it surfaces races to you. Because you can hire AI drivers to do those races for you, which is good. But also, like, I just got to the third season, and the first week there, it's like, here's seven races you can do. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm not going to do, you know, six, seven races a week, even if I have AI drivers doing half of them. And some of them are like lower tier series that I should not be doing anymore. So I'm going to have to, you can like forfeit or pull out of some of these series. So I might have to do some of that. But you still want to kind of do some of them because you're going to get money out of it. And that's what you need to, you know, get new cars and upgrade your headquarters and all that. So that's kind of where I'm at on that, but still enjoying it. Still having some issues with the way that this game tries to, you know, be a more casual, approachable racing game while still omitting things like a speedometer and some of that kind of stuff that would help out a lot in some parts of this game. So there's some of that, but I'm hoping to get enough into this game to do a review later this week. We'll see. But that's the update on that. I did get in a Star Wars Zero Company from Gamefly to start checking it out. I've done a little bit of the game so far, so they kind of break it up almost like a Persona fashion of daily kind of thing that you're doing. You're running this mercenary group called Zero Company. It gets this is set between episodes 2 and 3, like the Clone Wars are raging on, and you're kind of this mercenary outfit with a former head of a unit in the Clone Wars who's Jedi Master, which I guess is a Jedi Master that people that watch the Clone Wars series would know, because he's a guy that gets his whole unit killed. And your character is like the lone survivor there who's taken a lot of heat, probably both personally and militarily for it, but has kind of gone off the map and done their own thing. Kind of built it up enough that the Republic wants to use you to help them out. And you are the main character, Hux, in a Mass Effect fashion, where you are a character whose last name is Set, but you can pick a first name and go through a bit of a character creator. It's nothing too fancy. They give you like 6 races, which includes like Human, Twi'lek. There's the Togruta, I think it is, which is the race that Ahsoka is. I think also the race that Darth Maul is. Mm-hmm. Is in there with like the little ring of horns on their head.
Yeah.
I picked what I think is Davarian, which is a race of sort of almost like demon like horns on the front of their heads. I think there's a sixth one, which I forget what it is. It's not, I think it's a more human like one. But you're kind of in this weird set of races that I almost feel like.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been fun to have some more recognizable stuff. Like if I could be a Rodian, I'd be a Rodian. Which is a shame because you start the game with a Rodian in your crew, but they get set up to die to show you how that whole stuff works. And so, yeah, this is an XCOM like, maybe a little bit of XCOM, a little bit of Mario and Raving Rabbids. Because you can kind of get some points where you can kind of run around an area before between fights. I haven't seen like collectibles or anything between the fights, so it's more of just a vibes thing more than anything mechanical there. And yeah, you go back to your base every time. And where I'm at, I've like 5 days in. You start with a huge debt to the huts. At your contact with the huts is like a hut that has a monocle. So we're getting some real innovation in what huts can look like this year with that. And the one hut that's in Mandalorian and Grogu was a buff hut. Some good stuff there, but working with the Republic, they essentially give you enough money to pay off that debt. So initially it's like, oh man, we're going to have to work this off and maybe try to get something big, but eventually just get it written off pretty quickly. Having to worry about it. But yeah, as you complete each day, it kind of opens up more areas of your home base. You see like the medical wing where, you know, seriously injured units will go to. You have like a memorial wall, your place to manage your weapons. You can change your look at any time. So if you don't like the way your race looks, you can change races and all that mid campaign and all that. And that seems pretty cool so far. The interesting thing is like when you go to pick a mission, you get some intel currency to spend, which lets you kind of do some extra things that doesn't require you to go down and actually do a mission. But it'll be for, I assume, things that'll give you extra bonuses and all that. So that can be useful for things. But then you get to pick your mission once you're out. And so far it's been just like one mission at a time, but I can see it. You know, like XCOM having you pick where you want to go and kind of have to make actual choices. But so far I'm still like 5 days in and still unlocking things, so enjoying a lot so far. The strategy, the tactical mechanics all work pretty well. They have some neat ideas here for things like assists, where some characters have the ability to like pick one of the other characters as like an assist character that if you go and take a shot at an enemy, they will follow behind and kind of take some shots of their own. Gives you some extra damage potentially. And I believe the death mechanic requires you to have two knockdowns that you get revived from, and then that third knockdown will be a fatal death. So like when they show you that in the tutorial with the Rodian character, they get their second knockdown, get revived, and then you essentially are forced to send them out into like a no man's land area between your group and their and the enemy group. You're like, oh, this guy's gonna get lit up. They kind of have it do that. And yeah, you got a lot of fun stuff going on here. You got your big ship that flies between areas. You're going through different parts of this map here that is pretty neat. You're kind of earning rep in these different sections. I assume get you some bonus at some point, but they haven't really explained that stuff just yet. But been enjoying that so far. Looking forward to putting some more time into that. And the other thing I've been playing is the Pixel Junk Monsters 3 playtest. I'm going to be doing a video for this probably tonight. I recorded one earlier and didn't like how it turned out. But so this is a limited playtest because it just has one stage to it. And from what the devs have said in the Discord, it's basically like a middle of the campaign save or a stage so that it's not super easy. Kind of learn things from way people are liking things sort of at this point of the campaign. You get no real progression or anything out of it, but they do have like some of the new things. They have this screen that you get before you start that shows like 5 goals you want to do, which can be like collecting a certain amount of coins, defeating a certain amount of monsters, building a certain amount of towers, that kind of stuff. But unfortunately, they don't let you see that while you're doing the stage. So it's just kind of like a weird thing that you kind of have to see beaten it once. So I've only seen like the after screen once, and it shows you like how you did on some of that stuff. So I assume you're expected to play these stages multiple times to try to get these things. I don't know if you have to do them all at once or what, but there's some neat stuff here with this game. So one thing is, if you've played the original game, the tower screen that you're picking which tower to plant on a tree, mm-hmm. It's kind of a static thing that you rotated.
Mm.
Here you just push the left stick in the direction of the thing you want to do. Put in, which makes it a little more immediate, especially if you're, you know, starting on one tower and having to swap all the way to one on the other end, which is a more immediate answer to that kind of thing. Some of the stages have these big trees you'll find that if you plant a tower there, it turns into, I think, 3 towers. Usually it might be something that changes depending on the map or something like that, but that's like a neat idea. So I got like one of the unlocks was this hive. I was like, well, this is a tower that you don't need to be close to anything. So I planted it on this big tree that was deep in the woods, and that kind of was a nice thing to see. It kind of gets you a bunch of like that one, the hive, the bees kind of fly to you and kind of hover around you, and then as you're near enemies, they will do damage to them.
Mm-hmm.
They'll fly over and hit them. There's a new boomerang tree that can attack both air and ground troops, or monsters, and that one's pretty neat to have hanging around. And the third one's like a flamethrower tower that just does ground troops or enemies. That I've not gotten yet because it's, you know, less useful compared to the others, but I'm sure it's pretty useful when you got some of the waves that are more heavy on enemies. That is pretty cool. The little home base where all the chibis are hanging at, the little kids, has a big plant that's coming out of it now. As you're playing, you get this thing like lighting up. As it's and as it fills up, it shoots out this big seed to a random part of the map that if you go and dance on it to fill up its meter, it will give you a random perk, which can do, you know, a variety of things, like give you extra coins for enemies you kill, or things that will make towers cheaper, or the towers you're unlocking at the home base a little cheaper. I even had one that gave you a 40% chance at the end of each wave to bring a chibi back to life. So if you lost some, that was a way to get those brought back. Though if you want to, on the perks, you can spend that to just bring one chibi back. So if you don't really like what you got there, you can also spend coins to refresh the trio of options you have. So if you don't like any of them, you can spend some coinage for that. But like with the first game, you don't want to spend coins. You don't have to, because at the end of each wave, you get like 10% back. So you kind of want to spend your stuff wisely and not run yourself out of cash every time. The other nice thing is the flying waves of enemies. You can walk right under them. You don't collide with them anymore, so that is really nice for when you're trying to gather coins and all that. You don't have to risk hitting them anymore, so that is a great change. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else, at least on this map. I don't think so. They got a lot of the same mechanics of collecting the gems to that you can spend either unlocking new towers or spend on upgrading your existing towers. There was a building sort of deep in another part of the map in the woods that you danced on it and eventually filled up its meter. It would essentially have like a little well that would pop out some coins every wave if you ran over to it. So that's another nice little way on that map to get some money back. So yeah, there's a bunch of new things they're trying here. So I'm really liking what I'm seeing so far. They do have like the coins. If there's enough coins near each other, they'll just kind of merge into a bigger coin. Do some stuff like that to kind of minimize how many coins you have laying around. But yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about that. They don't have any data or anything. It just seems like they're letting people play, just kind of get some feedback for things people like or maybe don't like. Making some tweaks and kind of get out a little earlier in the process so that they can know what sort of improvements they should be aiming at. What things people want to stay the same. So that's that. And that's been pretty much what I've been playing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I've gone back to playing Splatoon 3 again. After I finished Splatoon Raiders. And yeah, it is really weird going back to that game after having played Splatoon Raiders for so long, because you have to like relearn some things. Specifically, the fact is when you're doing Salmon Run, the fact that a bunch of those enemies that you managed to take down so easily in Raiders are actually a lot stronger and more impermeable than they were in Raiders. Famously, like the fly fish in Raiders, the fly fish, you can actually like shoot at them directly and you can kill them. And there's two reasons for this. One of them is that there's no like bombs in Splatoon Raiders, so they had to compromise on that somehow. The other is the fact that they're not as heavily armored as the ones are in Splatoon 3. So in Splatoon 3, the only way you can actually kill them is by throwing bombs into their rocket launchers that are on either side of them. And that's not easy to do, especially when you've got their missiles raining down on top of you, and those things are a lot stronger than the ones that they are in Splatoon Raiders. But I mean, that kind of goes for like a lot of the enemies in Salmon Run, because again, they're all a lot stronger than they were in the they are in Splatoon Raiders. So anyway, I did Splatoon for the first time in several days, and I got absolutely slaughtered. So gonna have to slowly relearn a few things, I'm afraid. Anyway, at the same time, I'm also still playing The Blood of Dawnwalker. I've been going through my second run. I'm taking my time trying to find a bunch of new stuff that I didn't find the first time through. There is, in fact, like a whole region of the game, a very large region of the game that you can completely miss out on if you don't know what you're doing. you know, depending on how you play the game, you may never encounter it ever. And you know, one of the things I'm trying to do is explore as much of the overworld as I possibly can instead of, you know, rushing from quest to quest, because there's this sort of there, in spite of the fact that, you know, the time in the game does not move unless you either take a quest or, you know, you physically make it happen. There's still this like thing in your mind that's saying it's like, man, I got to do this or shit's going to go down bad. Honestly, now that I know better of how stuff in the game actually works, I feel a lot more confident in going through it. But probably the other big thing I've been playing this week is, I'm playing the demo for Final Fantasy Resonance. That came out, a couple days ago, back Thursday. Yeah. And I just gotta say to anybody who's listening, if you're thinking about, wanting to like play like an old school Final Fantasy game, but one that's like still taken into the modern world and isn't like trying to ape Final Fantasy VII or trying to be like uber realistic like 16 was, this is the game you're going to want to play, because holy shit is this demo amazing. And you know, the fact that like this is based off like an old iOS game is what makes it even more incredible. This game isn't just fun. It is gorgeous to look at. They took that whole 2.5 HD thing and they ran with it in a way that really no other game has up to this point. But yeah, it plays a lot like, really does play a lot like an old school Final Fantasy game before Final Fantasy VII took off. Obviously, it's in 2D. The character, you know, there's your character, and then there's the enemies that are like have like big sprites. You know, it still goes through, you know, the whole. It actually goes back to like the old, class system that it used to have, but in like a sort of roundabout way, because a big part of this game is that you're basically finding what they call visions, which are versions of characters from like other Final Fantasy games, and you essentially end up taking on the class of whatever vision that is as sort of like a secondary identity. And they all have like certain things they can do, but it's kind of complicated. I'll probably talk about it some other time because I need to get a little bit deeper into this demo. But rest assured, if you're an old school Final Fantasy fan and you've been wanting an old school Final Fantasy for a long time, you have to play this. It is amazing. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right. Yeah, let's get to some news. And yeah, we first up have some NSO news as they dropped 3 NES games for the NES app. And I played some of these, and I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's Ikari Warriors, which is the NES adaptation of a classic arcade game. It had sort of a... it was sort of an arcade stick that you rotated versus pushing in any direction.
Mm-hmm.
That was really neat, but they don't have anything like that for the NES. So what it does is you just shoot in the direction you're pointing and hope there's enemies there. So much so that if you're facing up and need to start shooting downward, you have to literally wait for the character to turn around.
Mm-hmm.
And this like specific animation that just kind of makes it feel very slow.
Mm.
And like a very poorly controlling game.
Hmm.
And apparently there's a code for continuing that I could never get right when I was playing this. So there's a way to make it easier. I just couldn't figure it out for that. So that's one you can check out.
Mm-hmm.
There's Ninja Gaiden 3, the Ancient Ship of Doom, which seemed pretty good, but like the other Ninja Gaiden games on the NES, It's full of a lot of bullshit there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's like a late NES game. I think like 91. Something like that, 91, 92.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And then RC Pro-Am 2. The mm-hmm. second of those games. Which I think I found to be pretty easy. Yeah, you're just kind of going through all these tracks, earning money by hopefully finishing first or collecting, you know, point or dollar pickups on the track along the way to upgrade your vehicle to beat the other ones, and it's fine. It's maybe not as good as the first game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just kind of a game that just keeps going until you don't have the means of continuing.
Mm.
So it's one of those kind of games. But yeah, that's a rare game, and it was also a late NES game, I think like 92 for that one.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Those are your three games. They're all yep. right. But yeah, that's what you got.
Yep. Yeah, now I got the entire Ninja Gaiden trilogy available there. Don't think it gets any easier, because if anything, Ninja Gaiden 2 or 3 are arguably even harder than the first one.
Yeah, though at least here you got save states.
Yeah.
Save states and rewind.
Mm-hmm.
But I found myself in Ninja Gaiden 3 just getting killed by enemies that didn't even touch me, but just got close enough that the game's like, that's good enough, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff, but... Yeah, I was like, good idea to like take save states at the beginning of the game and
mm-hmm.
at each of the new areas you got to, like at the boss at the beginning of the boss fight, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you took a bunch of damage, you're trying to figure out what to do. You know, rewind back to the start and kind of try it again.
Mm-hmm.
There's that at least. But yeah, there you go. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe got a big update to make it work better on the Switch 2. That enhances the visuals and all that. But yeah, this also adds some new features.
Mm-hmm.
The big one is now split screen can be able to support 8 players at once, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And arguably... not a great way to play it, because you're essentially dividing up the screen in such a way that it's almost like a phone dial
yep.
Resolution here. You can hardly see anything to your left or right.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do that, so there's that. I believe the other thing that maybe doesn't come to... I don't know if it's... able with this version, or it's also able to work on the Switch 1 version.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do a circuit or whatever with up to 96 courses.
Mm-hmm.
So every single course that's in the game, which would probably take you the better part of like 8, 9, 10 hours to do.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how quickly you get to the next stage and have nobody fucking around with that.
Mm.
So that's fun. I believe the other thing is you can make use of the camera stuff on mm-hmm. the Switch 2, so that you can have your face on there to react to whatever's going on when playing with other people. But that's locked to the 4-player mode. You can't do that in 8-player mode, so why even bother?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of shows the limitations of some of the controller syncing stuff.
Yeah.
I believe it can only support 7 Switch 1 controllers.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had like Joy-Cons or whatever you want to use there, you have to have 1 Switch 2 controller. Obviously the Switch 2 comes with at least 1, so you got alternates for that, but you have a big mess of controllers there. For that, so that's neat.
Mm.
People are starting conspiracies like, oh, this Mario Kart World's not doing well enough to justify that. So they're doing this, and I'm like, I don't know, it just seems like something to fill in some time between releases. And people are probably still playing plenty of Mario Kart 8 on a Switch too, so why not? So there you go. That's available now. And the other thing that they announced is that they're going to have two directs next week. So like Sony, they're going to have two directs, but they're not going to have them back to back.
Yeah.
They're going to be on consecutive days on the 8th on Tuesday. There'll be a Legend of Zelda 40th anniversary direct.
Yep.
At 7 a.m. Pacific time, 10 a.m. Eastern time. So you'll be able to check that out. And then the regular Nintendo Direct is going to be happening on the 9th. Same time, 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern. And I believe after that, they're going to have Nintendo Treehouse Live to show you a little extra gameplay for some of the titles there. So it seems safe to suggest that we'll probably get a dates and more information on the Ocarina of Time remake in that Zelda Direct. And I bet you'll also see Twilight Princess coming to the GameCube app.
Oh, yeah.
It still continue to annoy people that were hoping to get the Wind Waker and Twilight Princess HD versions on the Switch or Switch 2 at some point. So they can continue to stifle people. I'd like to see A Link Between Worlds get a port at some point, because that would be a fantastic game to have. Nintendo's continue to refuse to do that. We'll probably also see some of that movie that they got going on, so that's a thing you can probably expect there. As for the regular Direct, I'm curious what other Nintendo stuff they have that they've talked about that they haven't put out yet, so I'm going to see what they've got for upcoming things. Yeah, we'll probably see some more of the Pocopia expansion pass, whatever the next thing is for that.
We may or may not see one last thing for Fire Emblem Fortune's Weave before it comes out next week. Because it comes out on the 17th.
Let me see here. Looking at the wrong thing here. release dates. Yeah, Xenoblade Genesis is next year. There's the Pokemon games, Pokemon Winds and Waves. We might get a time frame there. Wii Sports Resort is out next month. I get some more details on that. I could probably see some DLC stuff, maybe for Raiders. There's all that much need to add more to that game. Let's see, Pokemon Champions may get an update. So I think it just got one for the World Championship stuff. Maybe for Tomodachi Life.
Yeah.
I could probably use something, but yeah, they're kind of put out a lot of stuff that doesn't really need a ton of attention, but if they got anything else coming out this year, they'll talk about that. But yeah, what they've got shown here, we'll see. Next year probably needs some fleshing out, because they just have Xenoblade Genesis and Pokemon Winds and Waves for the most part, so it's something that they would probably like to have some more early next year to talk about. So yeah, if you got anything else you would like to see or expect to see.
I mean, there is a lot of things I'd love to see. I'd love to hear about a new Mario game. And, you know, and by that, I mean like a mainline Mario game, not like, you know, one of the side scrollers. I would love to hear them sort of bring back one of their old IPs, if for no other reason than to bring some variety into the place. I'd like for them to... I mentioned Fire Emblem earlier. I would love to, there's been like rumors for years and years at this point that they may be thinking of producing a remake of Genealogy of the Holy War. But like, again, that's been just rumors for a long time now. And yeah, I'd like them to maybe bring back Soul Blazers, since apparently they're, if Terranigma is apparently making its grand worldwide re-debut in the near future, I'd like them to bring Soul Blazers back too. And also Illusion of Gaia. Basically all of the old Quintet games. Like I said, they've got a bunch of IPs that they've been sitting on for years that I would love them to go back to. So name one and, you know, I'd be okay with it. But yeah, that's pretty much all I can think of at off the top of my head.
Yeah, I was trying to think of anything else. And I think the other thing is, I think there's been talk of the sequel to Metroid Dread would be happening at some point. So we might get that. That's ready for next year.
Yeah.
And we'll see what Nintendo has to offer for next year. We'll get a good glimpse at the depth of what they have to put out next year as they deal with the ability to make, you know, more graphically intensive games that take longer to make. So we'll see where that all goes, but there you go for your Nintendo news. But yeah, we got some more stuff here. We got No Rest for the Wicked has been delayed for their 1.0 launch to March of next year. It was supposed to be out in, let's see, October. But they decided to push it. Which, sure. But it also came at a weird time when he announced, Thomas Mahler, the head of the studio, that he was putting out this weird website that tries to be the ultimate Metacritic. And misunderstanding anything about reviews, we're trying to compare review scores to the audience user review scores and who aligns best with that. And that's a ridiculous thing to do. Using a bunch of AI and all that bullshit there as well. Pulling in, you know, user reviews from like Metacritic and Steam and all that kind of stuff that is just fun to see, but nobody's going to care about that site for very, very much longer. So there you go. That's everything going on with this studio. So seemed like a weird timing to, and to release that was like, did you delay your game because you've been paying more attention to this other thing that has nothing to do with it? But you know, there you go. Yeah. So let's get to some more news here. Double Fine announced a new thing, besides their Kickstarter for Amnesia Fortnite, where they've like the voting for that stuff for the people who backed it ends tonight. But they announced their first part of, I think, what they're calling Double Fine Labs, sort of for smaller games that they want to put out. This game called Thank You Bus Driver. It has a very cartoonish look to it, where you are a bus driver, a chaotic bus driving game, where you take on the role of a town's bus driver, just trying to get through the day with minimal rule breaking and maximum gratitude in the form of thank yous. They mentioned the three main priorities on your bus: no rule breaking, stay on track, and be on schedule. So how you get all those done is up to you. It sounds like you kind of deal with people in a bunch of different ways, so that looks like that should be a pretty fun and silly game. No date on that so far, just PC, but that looks pretty neat for some new Double Fine stuff, so there you go. And we got news about Housemarque, particularly their co-founder Ilari Kuitunen is retiring from the studio after 33 years there. Put out a big post on this, as well as Housemarque put it out on their own socials. He talks about how he's been there for so long. He's kind of been planning this for a bit. So he talks about like the history of Housemarque, which, if you don't know, Housemarque used to be two studios.
Yeah.
A studio called Terramarque and another studio called, I think, Bloodhouse. Mm-hmm. And they merged and turned into Housemarque in 1995. Yeah. They were Amiga developers at the time and eventually started working on other things. and got acquired by Sony, and yeah, after 31 years there, Ilarius said, time for me to go and rest and all that, and yeah, it's a shame to see him go, but seems like he's prepared them pretty well. They promoted Sammy Hakala to step into the managing director role as of July 1st, and he's been, you know, supporting and training him and all that, and the leadership team,
right?
For everything they're going to be doing, so that's pretty cool. So a lot of cynical people are like, "Oh, this is because Saros didn't sell gangbusters." It's like, I don't know. Feels like if you're at a studio for 30 plus years, at some point you're thinking about what's next. And they've had, Sony's has a bunch of studios that have been around for 30 plus years, and a lot of the people that have continued to run those studios, you know, have had to make those same kind of decisions and decided to retire. I don't know that it's tied to anything that PlayStation's currently doing for any of this. But yeah, he's helped make a lot of great games, and studio still has a lot of great people there. So
yeah,
wishing everybody the best there.
Yep, absolutely. And yeah, it is unfortunate Saros didn't do Gangbusters, because it was a pretty great game.
Yeah, but yeah, we do have this Aggro Crab, makers of Another Crab's Treasure, and they published Peak. Have announced they're doing a publishing label. I'm not sure if they have a specific name for it. It might just be Aggro Crab. That they are looking to support what they call intense, stylized games with an attitude. And essentially, they're looking to support small teams looking for up to $500,000 for projects that can be completed in 2 years or less. They say they're offering flexible agreements with consistent base terms, adjustable milestones, and no requirement for full recoupment. They will not hold the final payment for a game's release date either, which, you know, might be a thing that affects another studio we'll talk here in a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is good news. I like when indies do well enough that they're like, we want to help others not suffer the issues we've had to deal with.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool to see.
Really cool to see. Absolutely. Honestly, like the you know, it's a gamble. Like, let's make no mistake about it. It is a gamble to become, to like make your own publishing label like this. But the flip side of it is that you basically can cut out the middleman and completely control the production and distribution of your own work. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and they say here that they've worked with great publishers, evil publishers, and everything in between, so
yeah,
they hopefully have an idea of what's going to work better than what they've been doing in the past, so hopefully that works out for them.
Yeah.
Then we got this Xbox news that Microsoft is limiting the cloud streaming on Game Pass with monthly hour limits for the tiers there with the Game Pass Ultimate getting 15-hour limits, Premium getting 10 hours, and Essential getting 5 hours, which is a lot less than what seems like at least some people have been dealing with.
Yeah.
They mention here, we expect this upcoming change to impact 4% of Game Pass subscribers, which brings to mind, like, how many hours were those people doing that you felt like this was the move to go with?
Yeah, seriously.
And yeah, also part of this, they seem like they will have the cloud gaming stuff open to everybody on Xbox in November. And by that, I mean, they will not have, it doesn't seem like they won't have any free with ads options here. At least not yet. They mentioned that players will be able to purchase cloud playtime hours through the Xbox store and stream eligible games they own and supported devices.
Yeah.
Which is fun. I'm curious what the pricing is going to be for that. That's the same for the Game Pass people. If you hit your limit, you have to pay essentially to keep going for that. And That's perfectly weird, but sure. Especially for how much they were trying to position cloud gaming as like a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, this will help us reach more people. And it's like, maybe technically, but I don't know how many people are going to want to do that, you know, from the phone kind of stuff. But it seems like they're making a little adjustment with some of this, as they've sent notes out to people through email, basically saying that in some regions, this may not apply to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as long as they continue to subscribe to Game Pass.
Mm.
So don't let your subscription lapse, I guess, if you use the cloud stuff a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Get that note. That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Strange.
From what I've seen people claiming, it seems like once they start getting past like 15 hours mm-hmm. in a month, it starts to cost more. It affects the storage, the racks they have for this, like the amount of resources that goes into that compared mm-hmm. to what they need for AI.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts eating into that stuff, and that's why they're potentially making these changes.
Mm.
They want to dedicate those resources to AI that makes them a lot of money
mm-hmm.
versus cloud streaming that makes them less money. So
mm.
more ways that AI is making things worse on Xbox. So that's fun. They seem like they'll mm-hmm. release more details on this stuff in November.
Mm-hmm.
And all that, so I guess we'll have to see what it looks like then.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
But yeah, then we got this bit of news. BitReactor, the developers of Star Wars Zero Company.
Yeah.
Had to furlough about 80% of its workforce
mm-hmm.
because they essentially ran out of money.
Yep.
And in spite of the game doing pretty well,
mm-hmm.
They're not going to probably see any of that money for at least a few more weeks. And as much as the management seems like, oh, we will, you know, bring people back, there's a lot of those people that are skeptical of that.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine plenty of them are, you know, sending out applications to other studios.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this doesn't seem like it was necessarily EA's doing
mm-hmm.
So much as the studio itself kind of running themselves thin
mm-hmm.
on this game. And so, yeah, like playing that game, it definitely feels like a game that came in pretty hot. Because mm-hmm. like a lot of the transitions to cutscenes, you see like hair getting reset and weird little texture stuff that wasn't ready
mm.
be shown yet, and other weird little bugs and such that don't really affect the quality of the game. But it's like, oh yeah, this is stuff that's, you know, a studio that's working on this game down to the wire would probably have happening.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, EA could also potentially, you know, front them money for a thing that's looking like it's going to do pretty well, especially based on pre-order numbers
mm-hmm.
To help them out. But no, they essentially had to furlough people for like the 2 weeks before launch
mm-hmm.
With the hopes that maybe they'll come back, which may happen. I don't know.
Mm.
This may also end up being a case of a studio that essentially runs itself into the ground right mm-hmm. before launch and never makes it back to full staffing. They may end up mm-hmm. just staying at whatever number they're at, maybe bringing in a couple people that would be useful for further updates that are needed for the game, but
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if we don't get any sort of expansion or anything to this game.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that would be a shame, but so far that's what it's looking like here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's your EA news of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. I swear we're going to go through it. One day we're going to go to at least one episode where we're not talking about people getting laid off
Yeah.
But I doubt it's going to be anytime soon.
Yeah. But yeah, then we got this Gamescom story that a thing that happened to a number of indie devs at Gamescom is they had stuff stolen out of their booth, even some that had stuff locked up that was broken into, which got a lot of attention, particularly like one developer, but a handful of others seem to have issues as well, in spite of, you know, there being security present, which then invites the idea that it might be an inside job from the security. But once the stuff was sort of getting around, Gamescom put out a statement that very much read like victim blaming, like we're sorry that happened to you, but you know what you signed up for, kind of thing. And so obviously people did not take well to that. So they ended up a week later putting out another statement, kind of acknowledging how shitty their previous statement was and all that, and making better, at least public statements on this thing. Like saying here, over the past few days, we have received a great deal of criticism for the way we communicated about the theft of hardware. To several indie developers. That criticism is justified. Our first response did not strike the right tone. Did not show the people affected the empathy they deserve. We are sorry. That is far more than a material loss. It can ruin an entire Gamescom for the people it happens to, and it can destroy work that took months or years to build. Work that for a small studio can almost be everything. Everyone affected. We understand what this has cost you, and we should have said so from the very first moment. We've already begun talking with those affected about the theft, about its consequences, and above all, to listen. We have also been moved by how this industry responded. Within hours, people offered help unconditionally without being asked. That says a great deal about this community. I know CDPR contacted the first dev that talked about the theft of their stuff and was willing to offer some hardware that they had to help replace some of the stuff they lost. And let's see, here's what we are doing alongside a regular post-event review and our evaluation of exhibitor feedback. We'll carry out a dedicated review of security for indie exhibitors. In the coming weeks, we will invite organizers of shared indie booths to a roundtable so that we can develop concrete measures together. We also urge every exhibitor who has experienced an incident to report it to us and to the police, even if it happened some time ago. Only then can incidents be documented, possible connections between them investigated, and appropriate action taken. They give an email for that. So yeah, that's definitely a much better statement, offering people, you know, a means of offering, you know, feedback as well as getting information out there, potentially see if these are all linked together, all that kind of stuff. So that's good to see. Should have been their statement from the beginning. And hopefully they learn for this from the future. Because, apparently this has not been an uncommon thing at Gamescom. So, yeah, there you go. But, yeah, let's get to the states of play. We have a lot of stuff here, but we'll skip through things because some is just things we've already seen before. Got minimal amounts of new information for it. They showed off a little bit of the two expansions, part of Ghost of Tsushima Complete Edition, the roguelite mode, and then the story stuff. And it all looks pretty neat. The roguelike mode, Jin is available to play as alongside Atsu, so you can switch between them and do all that kind of fun stuff. So that looks neat. That's on October 1st. We got to see a little bit more of the Ascendants expansion for Monster Hunter Wilds, which looks neat. So that's out next year. No date on that. Metro 2039 followed up their O&L trailer with a new one, showing some gameplay and then giving a date of February 4th. O&L just had February, which seemed odd to have for, you know, a date that's not that far out.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they were waiting for this to announce the date, so that's early next year. Then we got to see Man Eater 2, which is a cool sequel to get.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the shark here has gotten into a like aquatic theme park.
Yep.
And is causing lots of chaos. Even to the point that they do some wall running with the shark. Mm-hmm. Which is fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that is definitely fun.
And then, yeah, we got... That's out next year. On PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got to see the Lego PlayStation set that had been leaked a little bit. It's a $180 set out October 4th. It has, like, two dioramas that you can put into it from either side of the console, so that when you open up the disc tray, it has a little set for Gran Turismo or Ape Escape.
Mm-hmm.
So that looks neat. Didn't seem like they had memory cards to put in those slots, just the controller, which is a shame. But yeah, it's like almost 2,000 pieces, so a pretty beefy set there. So there you go. Let's see, we got some indie stuff here. Hunter's Moon. It's like a first-person historical folk horror game.
Yep.
That'll be out October 26th. Mm. So that's cool. From Twin Swans, which features two people from the Stanley Parable developer, Alicia Conte and William Pugh.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the composer from Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, Jessica Curry, working on this. So that's looking neat. Yeah, October 26th, so you can get that before Halloween and enjoy that. Then we got Uncanyon. This is from the developer of, I forget what their first game was. Graceful Decay. Yeah, Maquette. That cool little puzzle game where you're kind of on this little... recursive puzzle game, like little doll playset kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It looked really neat. This is their next game with a very weird name, Uncanyon, being published by Annapurna Interactive, where it's kind of a adventure game, puzzle adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
Some combat in it that has a really nice look to it.
Yeah.
It's out next year for PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
That's one to keep an eye on. And then Double Fine showed up with Keeper, putting out now, alongside an update that adds a new psychedelic mode to the game. So that's fun.
Mm.
And I believe the price has been dropped on all platforms from $29.99 to $19.99.
Mm-hmm.
And the PS5 version here has a discount to $15.99 for the launch week. So that's when you can check out if you want to support Double Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Keep them going for a little longer. I'll probably get that here in the next couple days. Yeah, then the weird thing is this show was going to end shortly before the Konami Press Start Showcase.
Yeah.
But then they put two of their big games on this showcase.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of took out a lot of the interest from whatever they were showing. We got to see more of Rev Noir, the anime RPG that they got being worked on, which I was watching this and I'm like, all of your eyes are a little bit too far apart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of that part of the art style. Everything else looks pretty neat from what they've shown. That is out next year. That'll be on PS5, Xbox, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got a new game they have in the works. No date on this. Rhapsody in Scarlet.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sort of a magic action adventure game.
Yep.
Some anime style to it. It's kind of set in a version of 1920s New York. And then gets animated.
Yeah.
Up a bit.
Kind of, Kind of reminds me of Shadow Hearts. Little bit.
Yeah, seems like you have two main characters. And it said some fun stuff in the trailer, like, oh, the Mafia uses magic.
Mm-hmm.
That's magic with a K. You know, it's serious.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's some weird stuff going on there. So,
yeah, oh, yeah.
There you go. For that, that's, yeah, no date. Probably at least another year or two out.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got some PS Plus news. Mycopunk from Steam is coming to the PS5, and will be launching onto the game catalog for PS Plus Extra and Premium members.
Mm-hmm.
In October, seems like. Though they didn't say that in the showcase, the Devolver Digital said themselves on Twitter that was when that was going to be out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, this is a neat looking game. I've heard good things about it. It kind of almost has people have been comparing it to like Borderlands, a little bit of a loot shooter kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There, maybe less Diablo style loot, but more finding weird ways to upgrade your guns and all that kind of stuff.
That yeah,
looks pretty neat. So that looks like it should be pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it'll probably be hitting 1.0 in October, so that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the retro stuff for PS Plus Premium, they're getting, I think, later this year, Mega Man X Command Mission. I guess it's an RPG. I did not know about this game.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Yeah, it's an RPG, I guess, with terrible localization, voice acting to it, so that's fun. Dino Crisis 2 will be coming for the PS1, so the Dino Crisis people have both of them there to enjoy. And then close it out with Ratchet & Clank, the first one for the PS2, is also coming later this year, so that's exciting. That's a great game. Not as good as the ones that followed it, but
yeah,
they're really fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have a much easier time uninverting the horizontal controls on that.
Yeah, definitely.
They did that for the HD collection, but if you go play the PS2 original, you'll have to be very annoyed.
Yeah, prepare yourselves.
Left and right are reversed.
Yeah. Also prepare for one of the most unusually difficult final boss fights in any of these games, even though it really has no reason to be that difficult.
Like, I would say it might be the worst final boss fight I've ever played.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause if you don't get lucky and beat it quickly, you just drain ammo with no real easy way to build it back up.
Yeah.
With the way that ammo works in that game.
Because
you're essentially going through multiple phases of this fight and just dumping ammo, and when you die, you just get respawned at the beginning, but not with your ammo refilled, what it was when you first started. And that's the problem. Unlike every other part of the game where you get reset back to a place and you get the ability to kind of refill your stuff, that one you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes this shit if you don't get it beaten pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Which I remember when I rented that game originally, never beat that fight. Essentially got to that point, and I was like, man, fuck this.
Seriously.
But when I did my full series replays, I managed to do that within like 5 or 6 runs, and that was a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's fun. Luckily, you can just save state.
Mm-hmm.
You just save at the start of that fight and be like, all right, I died. Let's just relaunch here. Instead of giving the game any sort of way to fuck you over. So,
yeah.
Let's see. Then Saros has a new update coming later this year called Zenith that will add Overlord Rush, where you can take on the powerful Overlord enemies from the main game back-to-back-to-back. I guess the boss rush, essentially.
Mm.
I didn't realize they called the bosses Overlords, but And yeah, they have leaderboards for that and all that, so that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
They're also bringing Eclipse Layers, a new game plus mode, which allows seasoned enforcers to put their skills to the ultimate test.
Mm-hmm.
And players return to the beginning and take on a more challenging version of the game. So that's fun. Yeah, they're also adding new secrets and trophies and all that, so mm-hmm. that's cool. And I believe it's also adds some new accessibility options to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe gyro aiming. So if you like that, you can do that for this one as well. So there you go. Some cool stuff there.
Mm.
Then Kazunori Yamauchi showed up and said, hey, I got more big updates for Gran Turismo 7.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fun. It's being broken up into let me see here. It's being broken up into two parts for the Spec 4 updates. Spec 3 was the most recent one that they put out.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of the DLC as well.
Mm.
But yeah, they've mentioned, let's see, there's an October one and a December one. Has a new circuit in the October one, 6 new cars, a new opening cinematic for that new update.
Mm-hmm.
Vintage, a section featuring cars no longer available to purchase new. Car Concierge, a service for ordering used and legend cars. Experience, a mode featuring brand-specific driving challenges.
Mm.
Car Viewer, so you can fuck your cars visually.
Mm. Yep.
And yeah, increasing the collector level cap. December updates features Autumn Ring, which is one of the classic Gran Turismo like original tracks. So
mm-hmm.
that's great. I think they're doing versions that are the original track design and an updated version of it. So
mm-hmm.
There's 6 new cars, a new family mode. I think we'll just offer like quick challenge stuff to play with family, you know, mm-hmm. kids. Parents, whatever. Shuffle races. It looks neat. An online drift trial so you can do your drift stuff against other people.
Mm.
Yeah, the next evolution of their AI stuff, the Gran Turismo Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. So if you want more challenge, that'll be that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that sounds neat. Continue to
support
that game.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got a date for Until Dawn 2.
Yep.
January 28th.
Yep.
I got to see more of the cast, which featured one character, one person I knew of, Dacre Montgomery, mm-hmm. who you might know as Billy Hargrove from Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in other stuff as well, but I saw him and I was like, it looks like Billy, and it ended up being him. I was like, all right, cool. Mm-hmm. The IMDb for the page for the game suggests that the one kid from Cobra Kai is also in this, and I don't know if I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not been in any of the trailers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Robbie Keane. Peter Stormare is back as the guy that you see in interstitials and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this looks pretty good. I set around like a YouTube channel of people that do like spooky ghost hunter stuff. It's a reality show that's set on this island that they're, I guess, tricked into going to.
Mm.
And as a result of that, end up going through a lot of awful shit. You get to make choices on a lot of that shit. So
mm-hmm.
it looks like it'll be a fun time. So that'll be one to check out early next year. Let's see what else we got. Yeah, they showed off some limited edition dual senses for GTA 6, which looked pretty good, but also I don't need them. So we also got big gameplay video of Final Fantasy VII Revelation, kind of showing off some more aspects of that game, particularly like the airship stuff, getting around the world and what kind of stuff there is to do around there,
mm-hmm.
Especially going to Wutai. Be able to explore that. So, mm-hmm. That looks neat, and then also got a date of April 8th next year, so that'll be a nice late spring game there, so that'll be fun. Then we go to the State of Play Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, they showed off some more Dragon Ball Xenoverse 3. Fate Extra Record we got to see some of. That's out January 28th.
Mm.
That'll be battling Until Dawn 2.
Yep.
We saw a little bit more of Dragon Quest Monsters The Weather World.
Mm-hmm.
Then an indie game called The Eminence in Shadow Phantom Echoes.
Yep.
It's out next year. Rematch has a collaboration with Blue Lock, one of the current big soccer anime.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. That's September 24th that starts. Then we found out Cygames has a new publishing label called Cygames mm-hmm. Edge. And they're publishing a game called Where the Seeds Fall.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems like a Foddy-like, a Bennett Foddy-like.
Yeah.
Where instead of climbing up things, you're going down.
Mm-hmm.
And dropping, and I guess this also is like a bunch of bullshit games that are in Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
Not Reddit, Roblox. So,
yeah.
You're kind of dropping down these platforms and occasionally have to drop like mm-hmm. a flower that softens your fall and all that. And you got this weird little like bright girl hanging out with you.
Mm-hmm.
That looks neat. That's out November 5th. Then we got a game called from Krafton, published by Krafton, called WCPA World Phasebound Control Authority. That seemed like, hey, we've seen all these SCP games and Control. Mm-hmm. What if we made a game containing all of that?
Yep.
I made it look like it's from it's set in the world of Control.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's got that. It has Control. Or a co-op stuff in there as well. Might be out in 2028. I don't know, but that was weird. We got a demo out now for Stupid Never Dies.
Mm-hmm.
That's out now. And a demo for Slash Zero that's out now.
Mm-hmm.
That one's supposed to be a 10-hour demo.
Mm.
There's a bunch of content in it, so you can check it out and see a lot of that game. So
yeah,
there you go. Then we had, they showed off a little bit of the DLC for Echoes of Aincrad, Sword Art Online, and Digimon Story Time Strangers. Those are still, have no dates.
Mm.
Then we got another game that looks like, they said, people like Black Flag, mm-hmm. Assassin's Creed Black Flag. What if we do that? And so what came out is Conk, Crown mm-hmm. of No Quarter.
Yep.
For PS5 and PC, that's out next year. And yeah, they call it like a tactical action game.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're kind of on pirate ships going around, fighting other ships, and doing all that stuff.
Yep.
With some other weird, like they said, it's set in a dark fantasy purgatory, so
yeah,
some other weird stuff going on here.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah,
basically a bunch of armies from like all over history sort of found up in the middle of this essentially kind of limbo, more or less.
Yeah, a lot of like sea battles, land battles and such. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, it seems like they played a lot of like the Assassin's Creed games from
mm-hmm.
the last decade or so.
Mm-hmm.
Then we end on Dabba, Land of Water Scar. This is a kind of Hero Project game that is coming out next spring, mm-hmm. published by Sony. The developer is Dark Star.
Yeah.
Which looks pretty neat. I'm not sure what mythology it's influenced by, but it's definitely got some influences from something in China.
Mm-hmm.
That looks pretty neat. But yeah, you are playing a character that is a clay man.
Mm-hmm.
Which they don't really explain it too much here, but looks like it should be pretty neat.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll find out more maybe at TGS or something, but yeah. That ends the showcase there with a good bit of interesting stuff here.
Yeah, it's fairly eclectic. I will give it that.
Yeah, probably what you get when you have a regular showcase that could have anything in it, and one that just focuses on Japan and Asia studios. When the first one also includes Japan and Asia studios.
Mm-hmm.
And just dealing with what you got.
Yep.
Because, you know, some of these studios are holding things back for the, probably for the Nintendo Direct.
Mm-hmm.
Others are just holding them back to announce maybe at the Game Awards.
Yep.
Maybe other stuff at TGS and other things that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they, some of these want to wait till after GTA 6 comes out to announce their thing. And so, you know, you deal with what you got. But a lot of people are like, this is the worst thing ever. What's going on? It's like, if you're mad at all these showcases, don't watch them.
Yeah, seriously.
Get on the YouTube afterwards and see what stuff, what trailers are up there and look at them.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of wasting your time. But, yeah, so there you go. Some pretty neat stuff. So anything here you're looking forward to, Brandon?
There's a few things. Obviously, Metro 2039 is a big one. I really can't wait to play that one. Final Fantasy Resonance, again, I've been playing the demo. It's fantastic. Let's see. Keeper looks interesting. Where the Seeds Fall, maybe. And Crown of No Quarter looks pretty neat too.
Yeah. For me, I'm interested in the expansion stuff for Ghost of Ghost of Tsushima. It's Ghost of Yotei. But I haven't played enough of Ghost of Yotei to justify putting more money into that game yet. So
yeah,
I'll get that later. I'm looking forward to Maneater too. Hopefully, it plays better than the first one.
Yeah.
It was pretty solid, but still pretty clunky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Uncanyon. That looks pretty neat. I said I'm going to get Keeper here probably the next few days. Michael Punk, I want to check that out. I want to see what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Saros, I want to get more of that. I need to play more of the regular game and then enjoy what's in that Zenith update. Until Dawn, I'm excited about. That'll be a fun early next year game.
Yeah.
And let's see. Yeah, I'd like to get that Dragon Quest Monsters game, but I don't know. I have to look and see like what the pre-order stuff looks like. If it's gonna be another Square Enix game that isn't available to stream on the PlayStation Portal, that would be very annoying. I'm pretty sure they're doing that with Final Fantasy Resonance, where I can stream the demo, but the game won't be supporting that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you, why are you okay with the demo but not the full game? But yeah, that's a weird thing. But yeah, I need to check the demo for Slash Zero and see if that looks interesting or not. Because that looked neat. Maybe demo. I need to see more of that. But yeah, that's the showcase.
Yep.
And we'll have some more stuff to talk about next week with the Nintendo Directs. Both of them.
Yep.
Probably see first footage of the movie, I assume. Supposed to be out next year, so they got to show it at some point. And let us see how much of a Twink Lynx looks like. This is a standard look. So they got to make sure they keep that going. I'm sure people have opinions about how much he talks.
Yeah, there will be opinions. Will be discourse will be had.
And it's like, it's a movie. You can't have a silent protagonist in a movie. At least not this kind of movie.
Yeah.
There'd be some kinds that you could do that with.
Yeah.
But not a tentpole release like this. So Link is going to say things. Probably won't say, excuse me, princess. Unfortunately. I mean, if you're gonna make dialogue, I would say that's the ideal Zelda dialogue. But yeah, so yeah, that's gonna do it for the show this week. Thank you, Brandon, for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about. But yeah, if you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. They should check it out. And select strangers. We're excited to find out about more games that are coming out. As we're getting all this stuff here leading up to TGS, that's still, I think, like 2 weeks away. But all these showcases happening beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
is pretty neat. But yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.